WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Player is a new dark comedy about making movies. More specifically, it's about making movie deals. The main characters are shallow and self-absorbed executives who call the shots at a major Hollywood studio. The Player was directed by Robert Altman, who lived in exile from Hollywood for many years, and it's written by my guest Michael Tolkien, based on his novel of the same name. Tolkien has been to his share of Hollywood meetings. He's written 20 screenplays, four of which have been produced, Gleaming the Cube, The Rapture, which he also directed, Deep Cover, and of course The Player. Tim Robbins stars as Griffin Mill, a studio executive in charge of deciding which story ideas get made into movies. He gets so many ideas pitched in him each day, he's come to see writers as pests. One writer is sending postcards threatening to kill him because Mill said he'd get back to the writer and never did. Mill also has aggravation from inside the studio. There's a new young executive after his job. This executive, played by Peter Gallagher, thinks writers are expendable, as he explains at a studio staff meeting.
I think there's a lot of time and money to be saved if we came up with these stories on our own.
Where are these stories coming from, Larry?
Anywhere. It doesn't matter. Anywhere. The newspaper. Pick a story, any story.
All right. Immigrants, protests, budget cuts, and literacy program.
Human spirit overcoming economic adversity. Sounds like Horatio Alger in the Barrio. Put Jimmy Smits in it and you got a sexy stand to deliver. Next. Come on.
Larry, this isn't my field.
Marty, it doesn't matter. Just give it a shot. You can't lose here.
Okay. How about mudslide kills 60 in slums of Chile?
That's good. Triumph over tragedy sounds like a John Borman picture. You still have a happy ending on it, the script will write itself.
Now, you described your novel, The Player, as the novel that would get you out of Hollywood. When you were in Hollywood before writing the novel, did you ever get to the point of wanting to kill a producer?
What's the statute of limitations?
Yeah.
No, I think... Well, of course I did. I mean, obviously the fantasy was there. There was actually one producer who did say the classic, or I mean, I think a lot of them said, "I'll get back to you," but one in particular was wildly enthusiastic about an idea that I pitched and really promised to get back to me immediately on it. And he said, "I'll get back to you in 3 days." And 3 days rolled by, and I called the secretary, and then she said, "No, he's going to call you right back." And he didn't, and I was in a complete rage for months about that, and somehow maybe hit. Somewhere in that, I began to realize that I was not the only writer who was mad at him and that I had to learn to let go of that anger. And then I started having some sympathy for the executives in that position.
Well, because I had to hear so many
Because I had to hear so many ideas. I don't
day,
know if my
yeah.
idea was any good.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think I had an okay idea at that was... That could have been a good idea if he'd gone along with it, but it wouldn't have been a particular. I don't think it would have been a great movie when it was done.
What was your first reaction when you found out that it was going to be Altman directing the movie?
Oh, I was thrilled. I mean, we had been through a few other directors who had wanted to do it, and we couldn't set it up with them. And then Bob came in, and I knew that. No matter what the movie would be interesting, no matter what, I would learn something, because having just finished The Rapture, I was really eager to be around another film. And I knew that if it didn't work, it would be on his shoulders, and if it did, it would be on everybody would share in the success, and we'd have something really wonderful and exciting.
Okay, that leads me to the review of the film by our film critic Stephen Schiff, who wrote with great praise about the film in Vanity Fair and gave it a rave review on our show. But there's an excerpt of Stephen's review that I wanted to play for you. Here it is.
I think The Player is a masterpiece, the first one Altman has come up with since Nashville way back in 1975. Even though The Player was adapted from a well-regarded novel by Michael Tolkien, who's credited with the screenplay, the movie is pure Altman.
Okay, Michael Tolkien, how do you feel about that? Even though you wrote the screenplay, the movie is pure Altman. I wonder if you think that's an example of the writer getting overlooked or marginalized, like in the movie.
Yes, that's an example of the writer being marginalized. I can... Yeah, the movie is pure Altman in the sense that it's a party in a way that no other director can create a party on the screen. But I'd be happy to show, you know, my last draft before we went into shooting, and you'll see a lot of things that have been credited to Bob included in the script. I think that there's a mistake there's a misunderstanding about the role of the screenwriter and the screenplay in relationship to the movie. It is not the screenwriter's job to force the director to follow every single line as written. I think it's the screenwriter's role, and as one of the producers of the movie, I was in a position to make sure that I couldn't be thrown off the set. It's the screenwriter's job to make sure that the intentions of the script, if the producer agrees, if the director, you know, sees those intentions, the intentions of the script are honored. I think that the major structural work in changing the novel to the screen was there when Bob got the script. As for, you know, the notion that it's pure Altman, of course it's an Altman movie, and if and that's what's great about it. But the notion somehow that the director works in spite of the writer is a really ugly canard.
So what were the early meetings like between you and Altman when he became the director? What kinds of things did you talk about in terms of how to treat
the story? I don't know. We got stoned and kind of talked. No. What did we do? We talked a lot about one of the things that we talked about was the audience's effect on the movies. We talked a lot about reshooting endings
like a test screenings.
Test screenings, yes, and I think both of us agreed that the audience was to blame. And I saw, I think Jim Hoberman's review in the Village Voice, he was a little annoyed at the movie, I think, for blaming the audience or blaming the victim. Or condemning the audience for its, you know, for wanting happy endings. He said that was blaming the victim, and I think that you can't, if you call blaming the audience blaming the victim, then you're essentially releasing a lynch mob of all culpability in their actions. And I think the audience behaves in the audience's position in relationship to movies now is the lynch mob's in relationship to the person they're hanging. That they want blood, and they want a specific thing, and if they're not satisfied with that, then they get enraged. And that's why they want the endings twisted the way they do. And the studios, to their discredit, but not, I mean, it's totally understandable because it's about money. The studios, in discovering the way to feed this beast at all costs, have been just feeding them, you know, one dose of crack after another, which is the stupid endings the audiences are getting.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Michael Tolkin, and he wrote the screenplay for the movie The Player, and the screenplay he wrote is adapted from his novel of the same name. Now, Altman has a reputation for a lot of improvisation, and I understand there was a fair amount of it in this
Sure.
movie. Did you have to work to keep him to the script, or did you feel comfortable with the natural balance that was emerging?
All right, again, this notion about improvisation. You know, even in The Rapture, there are half a dozen lines in The Rapture which came out from the actors. One of Bob's gifts is that he casts so brilliantly that he says his work is done in the casting. He also puts microphones on every actor, you know, within sight of the camera, and then mixes it later so that all the voices are coming in at the same level and he can pick up sounds as he wants to. There are a couple of scenes in the film where we knew, you know, where dialogue was written or just ideas were indicated, and then it was understood that the actors would work. You know, we would all work together to get the points across. There's obviously going to be more. You know, the actors will have a chance to contribute. First of all, about improvisation, it works best when you're going for laughs, and when you're leaving the story, improvisation really never works when you're trying to get ahead with the story.
Mm-hmm.
So that the more essential plot lines of a movie have to be those lines have to be really that section that those aspects of the script really have to be observed by the actors. Otherwise, you lose the story. But if you've got six people around a table arguing about movies and they're all brilliant, you know, then if you don't allow them to the free reign, you're really losing an opportunity.
How did the idea evolve to get movie stars to do cameos as themselves?
Well, you know, that was in the script. That was actually in the book. Robin Williams makes an appearance in the novel. In the screenplay, we had to have Bruce Willis and Julia Roberts in the movie because they're talked about so much. And there's a scene in which they were called for because nobody less would have made the scene work. And then the party scene, you know, called for actors. And then the first scene that Bob cast with the movie stars was the party scene at the lawyer's house. And I think the first person he called was Jack Lemmon.
Mm-hmm.
And once he had Lemon on board, then he was able to call others and say who was on.
A couple of times in the movie, really bad scripts are read. Once at a funeral, funeral for the murdered writer, and once in a hot tub. And I was wondering how you wrote those, and if any of those lines are actually from your scripts.
the hot tub scene was up to the buckboard was a real script of mine. And the funeral scene, I can't remember where that came from. That wasn't one of mine.
Uh-huh. Kind of masochistic to make fun of your
script. I think Bob pulled that out of, you know, one of the ideas we had was that every piece of writing in the movie would come from a real script. And of course it's masochistic. Otherwise, but see, you have to indict yourself. Otherwise you're cheating.
Right. Otherwise you're really being pretentious, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, exactly. But you're also, I think, you're betraying your. You can't if you don't satirize yourself.
Yeah.
Then you're reactionary. Then it's just mean.
Now I have to tell you, you know this like fabulous 8-minute long opening shot without edits.
Yes, ma'am.
In the movie, well, when I saw it at a screening, the projector broke 3 times during that 1 8-minute shot. So I think
you
I
know that happens at every
impression.
Screening. Yeah, I want you to know it's not really 8 minutes. We only put that out in the press. It's 14 splices cut together. But we use the broken projector trick to fool the critics, and the audience doesn't know the difference. No, it really is an 8-minute cut.
Oh, so listen, did the making of The Player prove the movie correct in its cynicism about Hollywood?
Of course, it did. I mean, Avenue was. Totally supportive of us, and I know that we could never have made this movie with the same spirit or for the same low budget at a major. But if not the actual making of the film, the history of the project recapitulates the phylogeny of the species that we're dealing with, and recapitulates the swamp in every detail.
David Brown, one of the producers of the film?
Yes, David Brown and Nick Wexler, two other producers.
Brown said in the New York Times that making this movie was, quote, an odyssey of despair. he said, Michael Tolkien and I had a series of humiliating meets at studios.
The worst.
Would you describe what one of those meets was like?
Yeah, I went out to one executive at a studio. This was without David. He was in New York. And I went with a director who was interested in the project at a very early stage. And the executive brought me into his office. And then it was clear that he wasn't interested. And then another executive came in who had only read the coverage on the novel. And I was just, this was everything. Everything in this meeting was reminded me of why I had written the novel and why I never wanted to have another meeting like this. And suddenly this novel, which had been this wonderful experience for me, was turning into a nightmare. And the executive, it turned out that I could tell that he really only wanted me there for one reason, which was to confirm that the studio as described in the book was the studio that he was working at, which was true. and that basically he was sitting in Griffin's office. And I said, no, Griffin would have a bigger office, but that this was basically it. And then he said, I knew it. And that was basically the meeting. Awful, just awful.
Now, how would you describe the story at pitch meetings? Did you have to make the pitch?
I mean, 25 words or less?
Yeah, or whatever.
Badly.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I did a bad job on it. I'm not any good at pitching. I've had the four movies I've had made were all done independently. I don't know what it's like working at Warner Brothers or Paramount or Columbia or Universal. I've never had a deal there. And the 3 movies this year were all done, I know, 2 were produced by New Line and 1 was released by New Line or Fine Line. So my experience with the majors has been pretty bad because, I don't know, they like things to, you know, they like things boiled down and it's hard for me to be able to boil my things down. Or I should say once they're boiled down, then it's clear what they are and then they really don't want them.
So how did it finally come together? What was the key meeting in which it happened?
Here's what happened. David Brown and I hit the wall, and we couldn't do any more with it than we already had, which was we had sort of exhausted all sources of financing. Then Nick Wexler, who produced The Rapture, came in and brought it to Cary Brokaw. And then Nick went to Ian Jessel at Spelling International and was able to raise half the money from overseas and half the money from Avenue. We would then put half the money together from Avenue. My agency, the William Morris Agency, also represents Bob. They gave it to Bob. He read it. He wanted to do it. And then I can't remember how Tim Robbins got it, but he came into the mix very quickly. And Bob said he wanted to make it with him. And I think there was a little bit of concern at Avenue that the combination of Bob and Tim wasn't going to be strong enough. But coincidentally, the day we were talking about that, Pauline Kael retired from The New Yorker and was interviewed in The New York Times. And when asked to list her favorite American director, she started with Bob. And when asked to list her favorite American actor, she started with Tim. So we walked in with this clipping and you said, you see, we can at least get one good review. And
no, but she was retiring.
What?
She was retiring.
She was retiring. Well, I know, but, you know, at least we'll get an article somewhere. And in fact, I think that was brought up. What good will it do if she's not going to be there anymore? But everything I'm describing happened within about 6 or 8 weeks, which is really fast. After 2 years of knocking around with the script.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Michael Tolkien, and he wrote the screenplay for the new film, The Player, and he adapted the screenplay from his novel of the same name. He also co-produced the film. He also wrote and directed The Rapture and co-wrote the screenplay for the new movie, Deep Cover. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Michael Tolkien is my guest. He wrote the new movie, The Player. Now, you were not only the screenwriter on this, you were a producer.
Right.
So
right.
Did being a producer give
and
you...
And I'm in the movie. Don't forget that.
Yes, you have a cameo as one of the writers.
I'm a cameo.
You
I'm
and your brother pitch up.
I'm Eric Schechter. Thank you.
Oh, was it hard to choose which cameo to give yourself? Did you write that part for you?
No, that part was written... I wrote that part, and then as we were putting the film together, I knew that Stephen and I should do it. Since they wouldn't let us do... Dead Ringers, we had to do that. we had to do the Schechter brothers. And after, I was really excited while I was doing it, and then after I saw myself on screen, I vowed never again.
Why? You're fine.
I was very uncomfortable. I'm very uncomfortable looking at myself. I was very uncomfortable looking at myself on the screen, and I was really not as relaxed as I should have been. I could have done something that would have justified a close-up. If you'll notice, Bob cuts away from us really quickly.
I did notice that.
Yeah, I know. Basically, it has to be identified. I'm the fellow with the big white shoes on the right-hand side of the screen.
So now let's go back to your...
Now, you're asking me another question.
Yeah, let's go back to your credit as producer. Does being a producer as well as a screenwriter give you a different perspective on the movie as a whole and how all the pieces are coming together?
Yeah, but I don't forget that I had also just finished. In fact, we were in pre-production on The Player before The Rapture was complete. Before the post-production on The Rapture was totally completed, and so I had just finished a year of working on one film. Being a producer, I was privy to more information on deals than I had been as a director, and also having just finished a film, I was more aware of what was going on, and I was, you know, sort of better able to understand things.
Robert Altman was quoted as saying that these days he'll call a guy on the phone and be afraid that he's sounding like all the people in the movie. Has that been happening to you?
Oh, of course. Of course. In fact, somebody yesterday apologized to me and said, look, I've got something for you. I know it sounds like The Player, but it's Die Hard meets Witness. And the Die Hard side of it is really good, but we need you to, like, bring up the heart on the Witness side. True story. And he was right. And that's the, I mean, it's, you know, I'm not doing it, but not because the idea was, you know, anyway, it's the way you have to talk. And of course, everybody's self-conscious. At that point, I don't know whether the film's going to have an effect, but I do notice that people are beginning, I've been in meetings where people apologize to me for the fact that they sound like they're in the movie. And I know after they see the movie, people do, I think, do sort of feel like they're in a hall of mirrors.
Did you have to screen this movie for test audiences?
No, we adamantly refused to. It was one of the Hollywood things we refused to do. And when the studios came to look at the movie, when we were showing it to them for sale, we said that we would provide the audiences, and they could not have the print to screen for anybody else. They had to make the judgment themselves. And everybody honored that. One studio misunderstood something, or I shouldn't say misunderstood. One studio brought in a test audience with cards to fill out. Bob was there. He said, I will not show the film with this audience if they're looking at the cards. The cards were taken away, and the movie was screened to a regular audience, and then apparently it was one of the best screenings we had.
And why was it so important for you to not do that, not use test audiences?
Because we wanted because that was a point of the game that we didn't want to play. I mean, I think Altman was very serious about it, and all of us were, that we didn't want the studios to second guess. Mm-hmm. It was also a strategy on our, it was also a ploy on our part. We didn't want them to second guess. We wanted them to base the opinion on their own taste to see if they still had any.
And do they? Well,
they all bit.
They
most of them
yours,
bit
right?
on it. Most of them bit on it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
New Line won.
So one last question. We only have a couple of seconds. So having been through this experience of making The Player, what do you think the trick is to getting a movie made the way you want it made?
Low budget. Do it low budget. Do it independently low budget with a few bankable actors. With a story that people want to see.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest lesson that I've learned. Mm-hmm. That if you want to make a movie that you can't make for less than $15 or $20 million, it's unrealistic to expect the studios to bankroll it unless it's a studio film. And you're never going to get that kind of money for an independent film unless you've got Arnold Schwarzenegger who wants, you know, say, if you could get Arnold Schwarzenegger to do a remake of L'Estrada with Schwarzenegger playing, it's a great idea.
What a thought.
Well, but I mean, it would be interesting, you know, if you could get Schwarzenegger to do the Anthony Quinn part in L'Estrada, and you could get Julia Roberts to play Julieta Messina, you could get the studios to give you $25 or $30 million for that movie. Failing that, you'd have to, you know, you're going to have to find another way.
Well, on that note, thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you very much, Terry. It was fun.
Michael Tolkien wrote the screenplay for The Player, based on his novel of the same name. The Player opens nationally tomorrow. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.